Hello, I'm Eddie Merckx. Welcome to the VeloCast.
Everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of the VeloCast. My name is Scott.
And I'm John.
Well, everyone was predicting a complete change at the top in our first day in the Alps, and it was Andy Schleck who took the stage win into Morzine Avoriaz.
Aye, he did a good ride. I think he could have done better. He could have done a lot better. But, you know, to win the first mountain stage, it's an indication that he's got some serious form.
Yeah, he said after the stage, "I took a lot of confidence out of my performance today. It puts me in a very good position right now, but I have to thank my team for always being around me and protecting me. I've got to get my head around the position that I'm in now. There are still a lot of very hard days, but I'm pretty relaxed at the moment. I've done my thing, and I hope I can do a great race, and I hope I don't have a bad day." Did he leave it too late to attack today?
Well, that's why I said I think he could have done better. We've talked about, since basically the start of the race, how that final time trial is like the sword of Damocles hanging over his head, you know, in Bordeaux, because he's going to need minutes, not seconds, over Contador by the time they get there. Although, you know, Bert actually, he showed some chinks in the armour today.
Well, I thought that Astana played a very clever card today on that last climb, if indeed Bert was suffering a wee bit, which it certainly looked like when Kreuzinger eventually attacked him, because with Astana being at the front for the entire time, it looked more like Alberto Contador was in complete control and could have gone himself at any point. But I think what really happened was they just made it look like he was in complete control when he was actually suffering a wee bit.
But the thing we've got to remember is, you know, from months before the tour, Bert said that it's going to be decided in the Pyrenees. You know, every time he's been asked, he said it's going to be decided in the Pyrenees.
And that it comes back to what you were saying before the tour. I think even in the tour preview show that we can't really judge him by his performance in the Dauphiné, for example, because he's going to peak in the third week.
Yeah. I mean, let's look at it this way. Andy Schleck is, I mean, we've talked since during last year's tour. Andy Schleck is really the only person who is even vaguely comparable to Contador on a hill, you know, in terms of performance. And Contador failed by 10 seconds to hold them after a really hard stage in brutal heat. Bert's not far off the top. You know, he's only a couple of percent off his top form. And he's aiming to peak in the third week. So we might have seen a weakened Bert, but yeah, you can't write him off, because we might be looking at somebody who, come the third week, is going to make Schleck, who, after his performance in the cobbles, we've got to assume is pretty close to the top of his form, he might make Andy look a bit daft in the third week.
But, and as you say, John, you know, the sword of Damocles hanging over Andy's head is that time trial in Bordeaux. So 10 seconds today is no great loss. And I think, actually, Alberto Contador could probably be very satisfied with the result today.
Well, I reckon Schleck's better than I thought he was going to be. I mean, his form's better than I guessed it would be. But I still think he's going to need close on 3 minutes in that time trial. And he's not going to get it by nibbling away 10 seconds at a time.
No.
So if he's got the form, he should attack hard and he should attack early.
And we've only got, what, three other mountaintop finishes for the rest of the tour. I can't see him taking time in anything other than a mountaintop finish, because he's not that great a descender.
Having said that, today's taught us that one of the reasons to love the tour is it's nothing if not unpredictable. So, I mean, Bert might be suffering a wee bit. I was really impressed with Cadel Evans today. I mean, had a bruise in his hip after a very early crash that affected a lot of people. But he did that Cadel thing, and I'm starting to even tolerate how ugly he is on a bike, because your heart has got to go out to somebody who just tries so hard and is so committed to his team and his sport. So, great ride for Cadel.
Yeah, I thought it was a really intelligent ride. Once Kreuzinger had attacked in the final kilometre or so of the stage, he didn't even try to respond. He just rode himself back and finished in that small pocket, that small group with Alberto Contador.
And if he grabs his chance, you know, he's a very credible time trialist, so Bordeaux holds less threats for him. Mm. I mean, other good rides today, Jürgen van den Broek from Omega Pharma Lotto. He was up there. And thank God for my fantasy team. Robert Hessink and Dennis Menchov were both up in the lead group.
Yes, absolutely. Although there are certain other characters we shall come to in a moment or so who are in, I know are in your fantasy league that didn't fare quite so well.
No.
Going back to Astana for just a minute, I thought at one point Vino was back to his old T-Mobile duplicitous best when he attacked, especially when the camera came back to the chasing peloton, and it was Astana that was setting the pace at the front. It looked like they were chasing down their own man again.
Yeah, I mean, Vino did a good ride today. He popped going through the tunnel on Ramaz, which was the steepest bit, and then brought some bottles up. And he's still the boss in the road, because when one of his teammates didn't turn around to get a bottle, he essentially poked him in the ribs with it so hard he nearly fell off the bike. I've got a theory that this is the cleanest tour we've seen for a long, long time. These performances today were very, very credible, and a lot of riders who have looked imperious in the past looked very, very human. And I'm not picking on Armstrong there. You know, he had a crapper of a day. I mean, he just had an awful day in every way he could.
Well, we'll get to Lance in a minute there, because there's obviously a huge amount to discuss there. Before we do, though, I wanted to talk about Team Sky and Bradley Wiggins specifically.
Now,
Sky,
well, there's a question answered, which I've been saying all week.
Mm-hmm. Sky set an absolutely blistering pace on the Ramaz today, and there are a lot of people asking, what on earth were they doing?
Well, I think they were doing what I used to do in group rides, where I knew I was the slowest climber. Because, you know, even as somebody who did a lot of rock climbing, even when I was properly race fit, I was no Pantani, let's put it that way. So the classic thing is you get to the front and you ride the pace, you ride the climb at a hard pace that you're comfortable with. And if it's hard enough, even if it's well below the top guy's pace, they won't attack you. You know, they'll just be comfortable to sit in your wheel. And I think that's what was going on with Sky. I think the new Wiggle wasn't in the form of the, you know, your Slecks and Contadors. But if they set a high enough pace that he could hold, the others might just let him go. You know, just not attack so that Wiggle could hang on.
Mm. I mean, in the process, they dropped Geraint Thomas and Juan Antonio Fletcher. And Brad himself couldn't hold on to that group containing Contador, Evans and Schleck as we reached the last climb to Avoriaz. I mean, he said after the race that he was just cooked. He couldn't hold the back wheel of that group and let go for, you know, for fear of getting himself into some real difficulty.
See, my thought when I saw it was he should actually have taken something out of Evans's book. Evans's strength is when he's cooked and he knows he's going to get dropped, he realises early and then pushes on at the hardest pace he can hold. Brad lost a lot of time over those last 3K.
Yeah,
and I think what happened was he'd worked so hard to try and hold the wheel that instead of it being a controlled collapse, the elastic just broke and suddenly he had no legs. So I think it's a learning process for Brad. But, you know, he's still only a minute and a bit off the best climbers in the world. So it's a bit early to write him off.
Well, I was just going to ask that. You lost 1 minute 45 in Andy Schleck today. And my question was, are the dreams of a podium finish over for Brad?
Yes.
That was fairly definitive, yeah.
I think he'll certainly be top 10. You know, because he can test, he can time trial really well. But he's not going to repeat last year's performance, because last year he was hanging with these guys and it was looking like he was struggling, but he was hanging with them. This year, 3K is a long way to pop from the top of a climb that isn't even our category. You know, it's a hard climb, but it's still just first category.
Yeah. I mean, he said after the race as well that in the past few days he's been suffering greatly with the heat, which in fairness to him, a lot of people have said that the heat has been a major problem. So,
well, Armstrong, and I mean, we'll no doubt discuss him briefly in due course.
about to come to him.
With the benefit of 2020 hindsight, the writing was on the wall, because yesterday Armstrong was saying he'd really suffered in the heat. And I've never seen so many riders with their jerseys open and, you know, pouring gallons of water over their heads. So it must be brutal. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't get it in the telly. But Armstrong said it had been a hard day for him. He had a saddle sore. But the big thing was the heat. And what he mentioned was that the road temperature had been measured at 61 degrees. which was the same as the time trial where Ulrich spanked him. Remember when he finished with all the salt crusted
around
his lips?
Yeah.
And he said, those days are never good for me. And today was another one of those days. So, you know, as I say, with 2020 hindsight, in Armstrong's words, you saw the kind of the germ of what happened to him today.
Well, let's deal with the 400-pound gorilla in the room then. Lance Armstrong, a crash before the base of the first major climb of the day. I'm not going to say it completely did for Lance Armstrong, but...
No, it did. It really did.
Well, because the reason I put it in such terms was, to me, there was a question over whether the crash itself was the cause of his subsequent difficulties, because he did get dropped out that the back of that group when Sky set the pace. So, of course, it's easy, and it may well be the case. I don't want to say one way or the other. Only Lance Armstrong himself will know. It could be the case that the crash put him into difficulty, having to chase back, get onto the back of that group, and then when the pace went up, he couldn't hold it. Or quite simply, he just didn't have the legs to hold on the group, crash or not.
Well, he was involved in the crash. I mean, I watched the stage on and off like wallpaper all day. You know, I had the telly on, and as I was flicking between it and the Grand Prix, which was brilliant, you know, well done, Mark Webber, chapeau. But I was watching it, and very early after the neutralisation stopped at the start of the stage, a foot-on Servetto boy fell over, got up, and went... Then I think it was a Francis Dujoux rider, T-boned him, the entire pack went down, and Armstrong was off and on the ground already, and that's where Cadell Evans fell off and everybody. And then, just before they got to Ramaz, you know, where the pace has gone up because people are jockeying for position on the climb, Armstrong clipped a pedal, rolled his front tub, hit the ground at 45, 50 kilometres an hour. Now, it looked fairly innocuous in the telly, but Andy Schleck, who was sitting more or less in Armstrong's wheel, said he hit the ground really, really hard. And you and I know, as we get older, you don't bounce quite as well as you did when you were young.
I didn't bounce well when I was young either, John.
No, neither did I, but that's neither here nor there. So you've got a man nearly 40. He hits the ground at 30-odd miles an hour. The pack are increasing in pace, and he's got to chase back on at the foot of the hardest climb of the day. By the time he got back on, he's already well in the red. So my mate James Tolson phoned me, and we were chatting about it just about two-thirds of the way up Ramaz, and I said, it's too early to write Armstrong off. You know, he must have been in oxygen debt when the pace went up. He might chase back on. But he didn't.
Well, he actually had I hesitate to call it a crash. There was just
that was a comedy
incident.
Moment.
It really was. And I thought he was going to abandon. The look on his face as he eventually got out of his pedals and just stared at the bike for a second or so. And I thought he's going to lift that, heave it over the barrier and just walk off.
Well, no, my thought was, I mean, very soon after that, he reached down and touched his radio.
Yes, I saw that as well.
And my thought was, he's saying to Johan, that's it, you know, I've had enough, Johan, bring the team car up. I'm off back to Texas. But he stuck in and he lost 12 minutes. There were points where it looked like him and Brakovic, who was with him, were out in a club run. And people who had no place being near a GC contender were sitting in their group. But, you know, he got through the day. He's not a contender anymore. It might be fun to watch for the rest of the race, but it's I think we've seen the end of the Brunel era. I mean, not just the Armstrong era, because even without Armstrong, Brunel was winning Grand Tours. I think, you know, that's it. Done.
Well, certainly for this year, I think. I mean, Levi Leipheimer finished in eighth and becomes the de facto Radio Shack team leader, but I can't see Levi Leipheimer finishing in the top 10.
I can see him finishing in the top 10, but if he wins it, you know, there's something more up his sleeve than his arm.
Just final point then on Lance. Do you think he'll make it all the way to Paris?
Yeah, I think he will, actually. If he was going to quit, he had enough excuses today. You know, crashes, injury. And I've seen a lot of people who hate Lance. And I mean, I've been openly sceptical about his performances. Probably to a point where, you know, there's some suability in there if he was of a particularly litigious nature against kind of tiny wee Scottish podcasts. But, you know, His responses since the finish of the stage have been, you know, the crash was my own fault, I'm going to stick it out, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, I now have no idea what this tour has in hold. I expected today to say, that's it, Bert's got it, you know, he's won. But what we've got is a Bert who's shown a chink in his armour, which means the others are going to be more ready to give it a go. We've seen an Armstrong who's no longer part of the game, you know, unless he, you know, he does a Floyd Landis into Morzine, which
the irony of that would be.
That would, I mean, I'd laugh like a drain if that happened. But you know, he's out of the game. Importantly, we've got an Andy Schleck who's not going to have to worry about his brother. You know, he can ride for himself, and we've got some other guys up there. I mean, Evans. I'm amazed he was there after the Giro that he had.
Well, I still think, just talking about the Giro, I still think there's a good day in Basso. I think it may take until the Pyrenees, but I think there's still a day for Ivan Basso.
No, I think there's a stage win in Basso. I'd agree with you there. I think we should also give special mention to Ryder Huijsdal, because he was off the back, off the back, off the back, and still managed to pull back and finish in the leaders group. So once again, we've got a Garmin guy surprising us in the GC. So he deserves some respect. But Radio Shack, that was a collapse today. You know, that wasn't a bad day. That was a team in collapse. And the rest of the GC, rest day tomorrow, there's going to be a lot of people thinking about what they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, I still think It can only... I'm just thinking through the GC contenders, and it really is up to Andy Schleck to take the race to Contador over the next week or so. I can't see anyone else being the kind of attacking rider in the hills.
Well, no, the podium now is, you know, barring accident, Schleck, Contador, and probably Evans. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In what order? I'd still pick Bert, because I think he's a little bit low now, because he's aiming to peak for the third week in the Pyrenees.
I mean, and even if he doesn't, I mean, if he doesn't get any better than he showed today, he still has the ace up his sleeve of the time trial in Bordeaux.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why Schleck has to take, you know, man up a bit, you know, not up an attack. The funny thing is, you know, what struck me after today's stage was, do you remember when we were talking about that university talk that Greg LeMond did?
Yes.
And he was talking about how clean racing would be really, really exciting, because you'd have massive collapses and variations in form and that sort of thing. That sounds like what happened today. And I think Landis has put the cat amongst the pigeons.
Well, I presume, not that I've looked at very many stories ahead of tomorrow, but our full show will be back tomorrow, where I presume we'll be talking about Floyd Landis and Pat McQuaid and so many other things.
Just before we finish, one of the more unusual and pleasant surprises today was on the final climb up to Avoriaz, there were a good few of the People's Cycling Club jerseys. But the one that really struck me was Shona Robson, who, as well as being one of the best Scottish female riders for a very long time, and I mean, she's still a really strong, fit rider now, is also the woman in charge of the day centre where my mum goes for daycare. So, what the hell are you doing in the Alps? Get home and look for my mother. I think even she's allowed holidays. There's probably somebody equally.
I was going to say that. I would hope she was on holiday rather than just being...
But it's a real thrill to see somebody you know on a climb. So I'm really looking forward to BMFW or O&P in their Velocast jerseys popping up on the telly.
Yes, look out for them, folks. And I think that's probably all we have time for today. Thank you so much for listening and staying subscribed. You can contact us by visiting our website at velocast.co.uk, where you can also find out how you can donate or subscribe to the show. If you've enjoyed this show, please consider leaving a comment or review in iTunes, as this really helps with other people discovering it. Well, I hope you can join us tomorrow for our full show, which will be strange doing again after a week.
Because I'm really, really sick of recording now. I mean, it'll be about 20 minutes of talking about butcher's bikes and kind of recumbents, I would think.
Yes, probably. Anyway, join us tomorrow for another edition of the Velocast.